I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a leftist no-hate nut job says she hopes that Let's Go Washington's event over the weekend is shot up. Meanwhile, left-wing Antifa terrorists harass and intimidate conservatives who showed up at Seattle City Hall to speak against funding for trans refugees. And I'm all about the trash TV, but a new TLC show is too much, even for me. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Just click on the banner that says support the show. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. There's an event this weekend. I'm going to be one of the MCs at the event. It is being put on by Let's Go Washington, and I want every single one of you to be there, even if leftists are threatening it with acts of violence. So this is the annual Freedom Fest put on by Let's Go Washington and Brian Haywood at his personal ranch in Redmond. There'll be music, there'll be booths, there'll be food, there'll be stuff to do for the kiddos, there'll be me, there'll be Nicole, there'll be Ari Hoffman, and a bunch of other people. Political candidates will be there. You'll get to hear some panels that I'll be part of moderating on the three initiatives that Let's Go Washington is sponsoring. Now, for safety reasons, which have become very apparent, you do have to RSVP in order to get the actual address, but they make it really simple. So just go to letsgowa.com, letsgowa.com. It's 4 to 8 p.m. on Saturday, again in Redmond, and they will respond by giving you the address, and it also helps them figure out how many people are coming. So bring your significant other, bring your kids, bring your neighbors, whatever it is. And we're going to be doing another round of political trivia for a prize. So you can come by our booth, talk to us. My husband will be there. You can meet my husband. It'll be great. If somebody doesn't come and try to hurt people, because there was a... And look, leading up to this event this year, I was on a planning session because I'm going to be one of the MCs. Ari Hoffman is going to MC it as well. And I said, I'm more worried than ever before about the level of violence and vitriol. You know, especially what we've been faced with because of the initiative to protect girls' sports. I mean, what... People collecting signatures on that were met with out in public was absolutely unhinged. I mean, violence, tearing up signatures, same thing with the initiative to repeal the income tax and the initiative to protect parental rights and just the general climate. And so, you know, one of the things I want to know before I agreed to participate is what the level of security would be, and the level of security will be high. It's sad that that has to be the case. But then there was this post or this email, Let's Go Washington got from a woman named Erin Wood. And I just want to point this out because, I mean, this is the no hate crowd. The people opposing the initiative to protect girls' sports, what do they call themselves? No hate in Washington State, suggesting we're the hateful ones. We're the hateful ones. And they hope that a mass shooter comes and kills us. This is from, again, Erin Wood, who owns Natural Barefoot Hoof Care, serving Western Washington. So she wrote to Let's Go Washington in an email that they provided us with lines straight from the No Hate in Washington State playbook. You're worried about children's genitalia and making trans kids unsafe because you're effing bigots, da-da-da. You should kill yourself because it would be a benefit to the world to lose people like you instead of the trans children who end their lives because of shitty people like you. Don't ever effing email me again, you scumbags. For some reason, she was on their email list. I imagine it's because she was trying to monitor them. I mean, we, for instance, are on No Hate's email list. And then she said this. If there's a mass shooter event next in Washington, I hope it's at your event. And I hope you're the one that gets hit. Effing leave me alone, losers. Erin Wood, Natural Balance Northwest, has a business taking care of horses. I mean, this is the no-hate crowd. They are the most hateful, vile, violent bigots that there is. All because what? We don't think we have an opinion that 80% of Americans have that women shouldn't be forced to compete against men because that was the entire point of Title IX. And, you know, they're always very careful about how they word threats. The smart ones are. The ones that do this stuff a lot are. Because unless you say, I'm going to come and do this, then there's nothing the cops can do. It's just, I hope someone shoots you. Not, I'm going to come and shoot you. I hope you kill yourself. Antifa does this all the time. They'll surround people and yell at them. You should kill yourself. You should kill yourself. It's absolutely insane. I mean, not a surprise, though. These are the same people who were out counter-protesting at an event I was at, saying, see you at Nuremberg, fascist effers, because they think that our views are so extreme that we should be hung for them. Again, that's what no hate in Washington state represents, which is why every time someone who I think I have respect for pops up at a no hate in Washington state event, it makes me want to throw up. Because they think that our views are so extreme that we should die for them. When all we're saying is, hey, respect everyone. You know, trans rights are human rights. They're human beings. But that doesn't mean they get special privileges. And that doesn't mean they get to take titles from girls. So yes, I mean, I think any conservative event you come to these days, unfortunately, there's always a risk factor associated with it. But I can promise you that Let's Go Washington is going to have very high security. They've eased my concerns about it in my conversations with them. And so I would love to see you at Freedom Fest. We are not going to let the hateful bigots get us down. And we're certainly not going to, I can't speak for Let's Go Washington. It's not my event, but I don't think there's any indication that they plan to cancel it. But we do know that there will be a pretty large security presence. So letsgowa.com to RSVP and get the address and all the information. All right, I figured I'd follow up on this today. So if you were on the live stream yesterday, I got this epiphany mid-show that I was going to run out the door and head down to the Seattle City Council meeting where they voted on trans money for trans refugees, which is just insane. But we kind of hashed that whole issue out yesterday. I do want to talk a little bit about what happened at the meeting. But I also want to play some of the testimony from some of these trans individuals who showed up to testify in favor of the funding. Here it is.
It's hard enough to find consistent work as a trans person, especially when there is more variety in a chip aisle than the city's job market. I did, however, find community, and I would not be standing here today if it wasn't for this. I have met people who are willing to donate out of pocket what little money they had to help trans people with rental assistance, food, medical costs, and other basic needs. Which leads to the question, what message does it send that those with barely a cent to their name are doing more to help the trans community than our own government?
I am trans, mask, and non-binary, and I was raised MAGA. We fled Florida in the middle of the night because we weren't treated like humans. I've been told my whole growing up life that Seattle was a liberal paradise, and it sounded like paradise to me, a place where queer and trans folks like me and my partner could be accepted and just live. Unfortunately, it's truly only a haven for the richest white cisgender gays among us.
You may call me Montai. I'm a spiritual leader in the Seattle trans community, and I am here to speak truth. 2 weeks ago, I said Seattle was like the innkeeper who promised my people rooms, yet when they arrived, had no rooms available. I ask you for mercy. Now you have shown us a small mercy. For while a pile of hay in the stable loft may not be adequate accommodations, it is in fact a room, and it is in fact the inn. For this, I express small gratitude. With a $0.3 million, equivalent to the salary of about 2.5 junior police officers, our local mutual aid orgs could house 16 trans people for a year. To those who complain about how even this is too much, I ask you, why do you care about so much about so little money? The chief of police alone has $19 million budgeted. The SPD overall, $488 million. Think of the 20,000 people that money could be housing rather than being used to ruin lives with violence.
I had to watch it.
Yet ruining lives is what the critics are here to do. They claim to be budget hawks, but they are vultures who prey upon me and my community for fun and profit. I ask the city council not to heed the words of such godless people.
We're heard godless. Some noise of the right-wingers that are against trans refugees, I guess. I guess they're threatened by funding for care, for life, for housing, because we're fleeing their culture of death. We're giving our community space to breathe. They aren't the ones taking refugees into their homes. They're not giving refugees an actual future. They're not talking people down from the suicide that they've invoked. We are saving people's lives. What do they have to show? What do we have to show if we are intimidated by their noise? The news is scary, but hesitance in this moment is death. And the way to cut through it is action, with our voices resonating together and saying, no, Trump. We choose life.
I'm Nina, I'm a trans woman living in District 5. I'm here to urge the City Council to pass EB 12-1253 with Amendment 5 intact. The funds are already there. The committee has recommended its passing, and so many here today have explained the profound effect this funding will have. I have a partner that would not be here were it not for orgs like Traction. Our new sisters, brothers, and all the others can and will thrive if we survive. And this funding gives us a chance to do so. Thank you.
This went on for hours. This went on for hours. I didn't sit through all of it. I sat through like the first half of it, and then something crazy happened, which I'll talk about momentarily. And it's really them saying that they will die if you don't give them money to buy food and shelter because they fled here allegedly in the middle of the night from red states. And again, and Nicole, I know we were going to reach out to the city council to again ask, do you have any data to back up the assertion that tens of thousands, in their words, of trans people have fled here under the new Trump administration in a year and a half, tens of thousands, to Seattle specifically. So in a budget crisis, we have to set aside special funds for them. And Nicole, any responses yet?
No responses.
Oh, wow, that's strange. I imagine that those responses with the links to the data are coming right in. I'm sure we'll get those. And then, of course, when any individuals who were opposed to this funding stood up to try to speak, they were hissed at and interrupted and booed.
The equivalent of about 60 single-family homes would donate their entire hard-fought property tax to fund a slush fund for people who can't even prove what they are, what they claim to be.
Pause your time. Hold on. Pause time. We'll put 15 seconds back so she can finish. I'm just going to ask really nicely. That would be respectful to everyone. I will not let them boo you. I will not let anyone get booed, no matter what their comments, how we disagree, agree, whatever it is. We just got to be respectful. I hear you, but I'm going to protect your right to speak as well. I got you. I hear y'all.
Yeah, every single time. And then something even crazier was happening. So you saw I was sitting, you know, second row, kind of right behind the speakers. And there was an individual sitting in front of me that was absolutely terrifying. Rather than explain it all again right now, I'm going to play for you the video I recorded about it right after I left City Hall.
I was just at a Seattle City Council meeting. I felt so unsafe in there. So this was a meeting about whether the city is going to give $300,000 to trans refugees, okay? Now, during testimony, when anyone came up to testify opposed to this money being given to trans refugees, there was this like Antifa person with their face covered, I don't know if it's a man or a woman, sitting right in front of me in the front row. And they would mutter things to them under their breath. And then they would stare them down and take close-up pictures of their faces after they testified. I mean, it was so, so creepy. And then a group of women who had shown up, and Ari, who's a male detransitioner, got up to leave, and I was leaving at the same time. And that's when that same Antifa-type person got up and followed them out, and then attempted to follow them out of Seattle City Hall. So I intervened at that point. I asked security to step in. I even got on the phone briefly to 911 because I'm like, this person was so scary during the meeting. I thought they probably have a gun or something. They had a bag. There's no bag checks in Seattle council chambers. And so I initially called police. Then security said they'd walk these women, the anti-spending money on trans refugees women, to their car along with Ari. But I mean, this person was unhinged. Mentally unstable. And I mean, the whole notion of trans refugees and us having to give them taxpayer funds is insane. But I mean, Seattle City Council is not a safe place to go give public testimony if you do not agree with the radical left.
Yeah, and I was really scared for Ari, the detransitioner, who was sitting next to me in our red Make Common Sense Great Again hat, because Ari was absolutely getting it from these people. And remember, Ari just was beaten at Cal Anderson Park by like a gang of homeless trans people who roam there and have assaulted several individuals who've been in the park. So Ari was pretty worried. And that's the only reason why when I got up to leave, you know, they're like, well, we'll leave at the same time and then we can kind of leave as a group. Because I, you know, they weren't like specifically targeting me, but it was definitely more so at Ari and then anyone who got up to speak. I was there to cover it. I didn't speak about it. I spoke about it on the show. My opinion on the issue is well known and documented. But yeah, I mean, just insane. And as soon as that person As soon as that group got up and that person came out to follow, I was like, they probably have a gun or something. I mean, this person was unhinged, shaking, staring at people the whole meeting. I'm like, holy smokes. And so I went up to the security desk and I'm like, I need a cop, because I'm assuming there's a cop somewhere in here, right? Got to be a cop somewhere in here. And she's like, well, I would just call, I'd have to call 911, so you could just call 911. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. But then anyway, after all of that, they allowed this black clad militant to go back up and testify.
We have Purple Six, followed by Lou. Welcome, Purple Six.
Purple Six.
I want
Six.
To thank the council for doing the barest minimum of effort in addressing this and earmarking $300,000. That is something that should have been done a year ago, but obviously the administration at the time was not amicable to such proceedings. I will say that this is peanut money. This is such a small amount of money for this city. You are spending millions to expand f-ing flock cameras. And in that respect, anyone here who votes against such a small amount of money, the peanut money that my community needs, anyone who votes against it is signaling strongly that they are on the side of atrocity. They are on the side of bigotry. They are on the side of the people who are brandishing guns on my community. They are on the side of a villainy that this country should have extinguished a long time ago. So I want you to understand that as public servants, we will hold you accountable.
Yeah, veiled threats. So this individual is allowed to terrorize people and try to intimidate people throughout an hours-long meeting. I mean, should have been removed probably 45 minutes in. Should not be allowed in there with a mask on and bags in. They don't do bag checks. There is no security. You don't walk through a metal detector. Nothing. They should have been removed. And then they're allowed to harass us all the way out of the building to the point where I had to call 911 and get security involved to walk those women at Ori to their car. And then they just get to come back in and give testimony that has veiled threats, not only to members of the council, but also suggesting that people who hold what an ideology that you shouldn't gift public funds to people based on trans, you know, whether they move from another state, that we should be extinguished. And look, conservatives are not safe at Seattle City Hall, not safe at all. And they are not safe to share their opinion. They're not safe to testify. It is not a welcoming place. It is not a tolerant place. And frankly, it was very obvious what this black-clad militant, Purple Six, was doing in the front row. I mean, a woman named Victoria, who I don't know if I want to put her, if she wants her name out there, it's fine. But she had come up and spoke, and then she's sitting sort of across. And this black-clad militant turned, like, pretend you're Victoria just sitting after testifying in their mask for 20 minutes straight, looking back at her. And I'm like, there's security. I know you see this. It's just outrageous. I mean, if Seattle City Hall really wants to be welcoming and inclusive, then they need to do something about what happened yesterday. But and, you know, they're getting bullied into giving trans people money. That's all it is. They're getting bullied into giving trans people taxpayer funds. Outrageous. As I said, Seattle is one of the dumbest cities in the world. It truly is. All right. Coming up next, Chris Reichdahl has come out of the closet. Not that closet. Or is it? We'll discuss first. If you're thinking about selling your home, you got to reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Wes has been doing this for a long time. He's a fantastic real estate agent. You can buy or sell with Wes, by the way. So if you're looking to buy a home, you can also work with our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. And he's been through all the market ups and downs. Right now, for instance, there's a lot of listings on the market, but there's not as many people coming in to buy those homes. So you're going to have some competition if you go to sell your home. And so you're going to need to take more steps than you did, say, 5 years ago when homes were just flying off the market for cash offers. But Wes is equipped for this. This is what they do best. Go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, Superintendent of Public Instruction Chris Reichdahl, that is the head of Washington State's public school system, is out of the closet as a socialist. He posted this on his personal Facebook page. I don't remember the media in 2016 wondering whether the fascist MAGA wing of the GOP would destroy that entire party, but they sure spend a lot of time perseverating. What is that? Perseverating? What is that? Google that for me. On the idea that the DSA will destroy the Democratic Party. First of all, just to debunk you, literally all the media did was talk about how the mega wing of the Republican Party was going to destroy the Republican Party. Was it mean, Nicole?
It means repeating a word, action, or thought over and over again until it has become help, or until long, again, after.
Can neither of us read?
It is helpful or relevant.
Gotcha. Okay. He goes on to say, mega, I'm not afraid to admit I don't know what a few words mean.
No,
that's a big ass, that's a long ass word.
That is.
Mega and DSA are not two opposite ends of the political spectrum. The former wants to take away civil rights, further hand the economy over to oligarchs, and install a theocracy. The DSA wants affordable housing, a fair tax code, and accessible education. That's it. Yep. The right just wants to take away civil rights and hand the economy to oligarchs. And the DSA, the socialists, they're so innocent. Oh, we just want fairness and accessibility. That's it. He says the Reagan-Gingrich messaging machine was so effective that the massive shift to the right in this country has a lot of people believing that FDR, like Democrats today, are leftists. We will need another political realignment to recalibrate American politics and policy for the good of the country. Hang on tight. 2026 is the baby step to 2028. And stop vilifying those who seek an expansion of the public good. These folks are not communists. They would merely have been regular old Democrats from 1914 to 1980. Yeah, they want to, I don't know, push Jim Crow. It's media construction that has changed, not the core values of traditional Democrats. So he's saying, don't vilify them. They're not bad people. They just want to help people. Vilify mega fascists. I mean, this is the guy in charge of the education of all kids in public schools in Washington State. That includes the kids of many, many conservatives, many, many Trump voters. And he doesn't care about you. He thinks you're evil fascists. You think he cares about your kids? I've never seen in our state a superintendent of public instruction speak in terms like this and just openly celebrate socialism and socialist ideas. And of course, you know, big government benefits from socialism and more taxes and everybody give more. But this isn't the first time he's sort of shown these tendencies. So at the Washington State Democratic Convention in June, Chris Reichdahl spoke. Here's part of his speech.
I want to win because we are right around amply and actually funding education, including higher ed. Yeah, I want to win because universal health care is the best thing for the economy and people. I want to win because we thought eighth grade education was what we needed 40 years ago, and now we know we got to pay for college. Every single young person should have college paid for in this state and in this country.
Free, 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 free. So of course he's a socialist. That's what socialists do. He also wants to take back the country.
Our test is right now. 2026 is another test, but let's face it, the gift that keeps on giving is the orange guy in the White House. So we're going to win all over the country because they have a trifecta. The real test is 28. Are we ready to win a White House? Are you ready to win a White House? Are you ready to win the U.S. Senate by 2028? Are you ready to put more progressive Democrats in that Senate, even if it means replacing some of the ones we have? That's what I thought. You can't say you're for public schools and then fund charter schools. You can't do it. You cannot say you are for early learning and then cut transitional kindergarten. You cannot do that.
Jesus, what is
you
he getting ready to
run for? You cannot say
you
are for higher education and cut our colleges and universities. You can't do it. We are Democrats. We are Democrats. We are Democrats. We are Democrats.
Oh, it's not working for you, buddy. What is he trying to run for? Jeez, what is his stepping stone? He was really into himself there. And then he said at the end, and I'm going to talk about this on the show tomorrow, but, oh, you can't be for higher education and then cut funding or whatever it is. Democrats voted unanimously in the state Senate in 2025 to cut funding for higher education. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. How does that sound, Chris Reichdahl? But he clearly made a jab at, oh, we're going to get rid of some of the Democrats that aren't playing along by the socialist rules and don't want free everything. So now we have, great, full-blown, not a secret at all, the man who's in charge of our public education system is cheering on socialists, is cheering on communists, is cheering on the decline of our country. And meanwhile, he can't even do his own job right. Under his tenure, test scores have gone down. We spend more per pupil than we ever have before, only for worse results. Enrollment is going down. Attendance is going down. And so if he's worried about the state of education, he should go home, calm down first, because that was a little much. Take a deep breath, go home, and look in the mirror. All right, wild story to talk about today that came out from the Washington Policy Center, which is a center-right think tank. And I can't believe that someone didn't spot this before. So have you heard of law enforcement-assisted diversion? This was basically cooked up by progressives in Seattle to say, hey, we want, you know, not just to arrest people and throw them in jail, but we want to do these like wraparound services. And instead of like really getting in trouble, there's going to be diversion so they can get into jobs and all these things. And in theory, is the idea a bad idea? No. But as with everything the government tries, execution is always very poor. Maybe so poor that they feel the need to lie about it. Widespread and systematic factual errors in law enforcement assisted diversion, which is known as LEAD. So one of their researchers there, the director of public safety solutions policy, Eric Zimmerman, started to look into the last 15 years of data on LEAD and whether LEAD was actually accomplishing some of the really stunning results that LEAD claims it's accomplishing. I mean, the numbers that they have thrown out there about reducing recidivism, reducing especially future felony charges, repeat felonies, getting people into the job market. I mean, if you looked at LEAD's numbers, they say that this would be like one of the most successful programs on the planet. And in the last 15 years, it's spread from Seattle to many other cities across the country. But Eric Zimmerman, who was nice enough to join us today, says all that data is a lie. Eric, welcome to Undivided.
Brandy, thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, so these are some pretty serious, I guess, findings that really upend the usefulness of this program. So first of all, why did you even look into this?
You know, I talk a lot with folks in government. I'm a member of government myself, been in government in Washington State for about 10 years. And there were some questions. I think, you know, a lot of hope and trust has been put in LEAD for a long time now. And we've seen things continue to get worse in Washington. And so some folks in Seattle's government, King County's government, suggested I take a look. I looked at it. And in the first 2 minutes, I saw what I thought the problem was, because the numbers being claimed were just too good. We don't see that kind of change in social programs, not that quickly with that type of population.
100%. And as someone who's covered homelessness a long time, they absolutely stand out when they say the program reduced recidivism by 58%, felony charges by 39%, increased the odds of being being employed by 46%. That would be like, oh my gosh, every city in the nation needs to be using this and using it today. So when you actually looked into the numbers, what did you find the problem to be?
Yeah, and this is where I think we're going to find out what the problem was. But this goes back to 2015. From the minute the research was published, the research itself used a lot of very specific technical concepts and numbers. And some of those numbers from the first press release were misunderstood, and they became the headline number of a 58% reduction in recidivism or a 46% increase in being on the employment spectrum. And these things sounded impressive, but they were all misunderstandings of technical numbers buried in research that might have been difficult to read and understand. But from that moment, it spread nationally. 20 states, 11 years, federal appropriations, hundreds of millions of dollars, all which trace back to either folks misunderstood what the numbers said or folks just really wanted better numbers and found a way to make that work.
And which do you think it is, that this was intentional or this was incompetence?
You know, I always believe in the good inside people. And so my default will always be someone made a mistake and it just was never caught. But that is a difficult thing to have faith in as well, I admit, because 11 years is a really long time for the original authors, for example, to not notice and not correct that the numbers had been used wrong, or for someone else in government or in programs to not say something. It's possible that that's what happened. It's just would be really, really unusual if for 11 years, no one ever fixed the problem.
So help me understand, is this a data issue or is it like a semantics issue? So for instance, when they claim that LEAD reduced recidivism by 58%. Why specifically are you saying that's not true?
Well, because that's not what the numbers say. Just objectively, the best possible claim that they maybe could make is that there's like a 20 percentage point difference between people who are in lead and people who weren't in lead, maybe. But even those numbers are really hard to accept because there was so many structural problems and design problems with the study. The two groups came from different geographic areas. They were studied at different times. The control group, which is the group outside of lead, had a pattern of increased enforcement from Seattle Police Department at different times where the lead group wasn't subject to that. And so for all of these reasons, even the most charitable number that we could look at in the study to try to say, well, maybe it did make this difference, we kind of have to set that aside because the groups just can't be compared, the lead group and the non-lead group. There's no ability for us to really compare them and say that there was a difference between them at all.
Yeah, whenever I see any sort of data about, like, for instance, property crimes are down or, you know, strong-armed robberies are down, my automatic suspicion always goes to, well, they're probably just not enforcing things or people aren't being charged. And then you can say, oh, well, you know, this went down, or people aren't even reporting crimes because they went down. So did they account at all for the possibility that as our soft on crime policies sort of progressed, that recidivism dropped because people weren't being charged with crimes?
And this is the benefit of looking at a control group, is you can see what happens in two different groups and see if there's a difference between them. But it's true that because they were studied at different periods in time, then perhaps the lead group benefited from changes in policing policies or when charges are pressed and when they're not. But another problem is the county prosecuting attorney's office. They knew who was in the study. They knew who the lead and non-lead people were. And the study itself acknowledges it's possible that the trial unit chief was treating the lead enrollees favorably in deciding to downgrade the felonies that they committed into misdemeanors. And this could explain part of why the lead study itself says there was no difference in the charges pressed, the number of charges pressed between these two groups. No difference at all. It's just the lead group had fewer felonies, possibly because they had a friendly prosecutor.
Explain to me the 46% increased odds of being employed. You say that's incorrect. Why?
Yeah, and I think this is where sometimes statistics can be misleading. And I would be interested to hear the study's authors explain why they thought this was the right framing for this. But yes, they found a 46% increased likelihood of someone in lead being on what they call the employment continuum. But let's put that in real talk because, you know, we don't speak statistics here.
Right. Okay.
That meant three people out of a group of 163 unemployed people, three people from that group got jobs. And maybe another three were in some kind of training or had been retired and you know, weren't likely to get a job. But in net effect, three people out of 163 got jobs. And that was turned into a claim of a 46% increased likelihood of being on the employment continuum. But this is the problem,
Eric,
is that,
stop.
You know, we laugh. We laugh because real people understand that this is no way to build a government program around a result like that. You shouldn't be building a program around a result like that. There's no result to build on. But they made it look like there was. And government accepted what they were presented with, and now it's gone nationwide. And the example of employment is maybe the most stark example of what I would consider misleading use of statistics in the study, but it cuts across everything. Every claim that's there is probably a claim that we should have viewed a lot more skeptically 11 years ago.
And the media particularly, like, where was the media on this and digging into those details?
And you know, there's hardworking people, the Seattle Auditor's Office, King County Auditor's Office, the Washington State Institute for Public Policy. They all touched it too. They all looked at it and nobody caught it. And I'm not saying that those folks aren't professionals. They are professionals and they're, I think, well-intentioned. But something broke down where maybe there was too much trust placed in people who were considered to be inside the tribe. And we can just trust people who want the same things we do or believe the same things we do. And we don't have to apply the same scrutiny to them that we would to anything else.
So what happens now? I mean, I guess, you know, what do you hope happens now? Because we don't know what they'll do with this. What do you hope? Yeah. What do you hope? Because this has spread, as you said. I mean, they prop this up as this wonderful, life-changing thing. It's spread across the country. So where does this data go now?
Yeah, and my concern is not, it's not that Lee's not well-meaning. I think they have a lot of hardworking, well-meaning people there, but they've had an assumption all along that they were doing something effective. And they have continued through 2026 to point to that study to say, we know we're effective because the research says that we are. And I'm concerned that they don't realize that they're not, or they know they're not, and they're just trying to continue to work hard to become effective. But we don't know how many people have died inside the LEAD program. They don't publish that information. My guess as a professional working on programs around the world in public health for 20 years, my guess is the mortality rate there is extremely high. And I think more LEAD participants have died to drug overdose deaths than the organization wants to admit. I think what we call loss to follow-up, people who just drop out of the program and never get repeat follow-up, I think that's also a very high number. And what I hope happens next is we can get an honest auditing and accounting of what's happened inside LEAD so that we can find out, has it been a safe program to engage in? Has it actually made a positive difference in people's lives? And if it hasn't, we still need to work with people who are in crisis, but we need to do things that are effective. And we have to stop doing things that aren't, or even things that hurt. And I feel like the lack of a change in behavior that we see in LEAD through the jobs data that was shown in the research, that shows a lack of behavior change. We can change the structures around people to force fewer arrests, or we can change the rules of the game. But if you don't see someone's behavior changing, that person is still in crisis. And we need to respond to that.
Wow. Yeah, it reminded me, I think it was LA County, I might be wrong, just off the top of my head, when they, you know, bragged about this big reduction in homeless people on the streets. And then people pointed out that the reduction, the percentage reduction amounted to the same number of people who died on the streets. It had been like a particularly deadly year. And so it's like people can play with data for all sorts of different reasons. Eric, fantastic work. I hope something comes of this. And we will follow up with you if it does.
Thank you, Brandy. I appreciate that. And if I can say one final thing about the point that you just made, in Washington State over the last decade, about more than 20,000 people have died of drug overdose deaths. And half of those have been on the streets. And so you can already see that because 10,000 people died, there are fewer people living on the streets of Seattle and Anaheim County. It's not that we're doing a good job ending homelessness. People are dying at a faster rate than we can respond to the problem. And that needs to be addressed.
Absolutely unbelievable. Seattle and King County need to respond to what the Washington Policy Center is saying. You're telling me that you've been telling people there was a 46% improvement in the number of people who, you know, got into jobs, and it was only 3 using a data set that small? Outrageous. And then how many other cities bought into this and have spent billions on the idea of this system based on faulty data? And was it a lie? Was it intentional? Or was it incompetence or just a desire to make it look good so you keep your jobs? And then how many people have died in the meantime and really got no meaningful help whatsoever? And this is the thing that always gets me about progressives. They say they care and we want to put people on a better path. Then why do you keep using programs that don't work? Why keep using programs that don't work? Andrea Suarez, I just want to play this quick, with We Heart Seattle. She saw this report from the Washington Policy Center, and so she wanted to make sure that the Seattle City Council was aware of it.
We filled your chambers a couple weeks ago with men and women in recovery who arrest saved their lives, and we presented you data from the Washington Policy Center that the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program is a scam. It's now a national news story. You now have in your inbox the information from Washington Policy Center that Lisa Dugard and her team have been unfactually presenting the data for years, taking hundreds of millions of dollars from us. Lives have been lost to the tune of 20,000 since implementing LEAD. It doesn't work, yet you still voted to expand infield pre-booking handoffs. Why would you do that? It's not working. We gave you the data. And the media is here, and everybody has the study now, and you guys passed something that you were presented data that clearly showed it doesn't work. We can also look outside and see we're number 4 in overdose deaths. We're number 1 in homelessness growth by 418%. We're number 1 in hospital response. We're number 1 in retail theft. Lisa Dugard gets to put people in a hotel and allow them to smoke fentanyl and hands them the foil and the glass pipes to continue to do it while ripping me and you all off.
And you can see the frustration on Andrea's face, and you can hear it in her voice where she says, why would you do that? That's the only question that we have to ask is, why would you do that? You know it's not working. Even if they hadn't cooked the data, You know it's not working. Look where we're at with homelessness and substance abuse. Yet you don't want to change trajectories at all? So then I guess maybe you just do want people to be here, to be drug addicted and homeless and eventually die. It's really bizarre stuff. There's no good explanation for it. So this is going to become and has already become a national news story. So we're going to be talking much more about the scam that is LEED. And some people have some explaining to do. Coming up next, I talk about on the show all the time. I love trash TV. I love unplugging from this hellhole world. I love the show. I'm talking about the political hellhole of the West Coast and just going home and watching the trashiest TV possible. Well, there's a new show on TLC that's too trashy, even for me. We'll discuss it first. There's been a rash of reports of fake contractors out in communities across Western Washington, you know, fixing driveways and roofs and installing new roofs and stuff. Do not do that to yourself. And I know you guys are smarter than that, but I would definitely talk to elderly loved ones in your life and let them know that the person who shows up at their door saying that they'll fix their roof might not be credible and trustworthy. And instead, tell them to check out our friends at Valentine Roofing. Thousands of Washington families have trusted their homes with Valentine for their roofing needs since 2008. I trust Valentine. You can trust them too. Every customer can expect the Valentine experience, seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, extra mile service. So if you think your roof might be on its last legs, you want it inspected, or if you just want to beat the rain, beat the mad rush, Valentine Roofing is now offering priority scheduling for your roof replacement. And they do some metal roofs as well, if that's something. I know a lot of people are talking about that lately. So if you call Valentine Roofing today, they can get your job started within 3 weeks of signing an agreement. And they make the process so simple, flexible financing options, and they're just cool folks. I'll tell you what, the two guys who came to my door with Valentine, they were so cool. I just wanted to sit there and have a beer with them. I didn't because I was busy, but you know. Call 206-ROOFING to schedule your free estimate. I also didn't have beers with them because, you know, they were getting on my roof and I thought that that might not be safe. Call 206-ROOFING to schedule your free estimate. That's 206-ROOFING. And remember, when you see the red vans, you know you're in good hands. All right, let's get to our segment. Unbelievable. Trash TV just gets trashier and trashier and trashier. And I love trashy. I love my shows about aliens. I love 90 Day Fiancé. Great show. Really any true crime show. I love Bailin' Out Loud on TLC. So this is not a knock on TLC segment. TLC. Homies, okay? I love Bailin' Out Loud, the show about the chick with Tourette's, and she just says some outrageous things. Like she said something about Hunter Biden doing crack off something, and it was like, it's just funny. This show goes too far. There is a new show on TLC called Double Lives of Suburban Wives. And it follows a group of suburban wives, I believe in St. Louis, who have, as the title suggests, double lives as sex content creators, okay? Let's meet one of the women.
All the financial burden was on me, which was fine for me at the time because I used to work in sales and I was approaching six figures a year. But COVID happened and I got laid off from my job.
Then we had to decide what we were gonna do after that.
We had to decide what we were gonna do. So, I mean, you know. The husband, he's overworked. He got laid off. So there's really, you know, no other option. I need to sell nude pics online.
Yeah, I have a double life. I am known as Tammy to a lot of my friends' family, but a lot of people in our online space know me as Erica Swings.
And then they show a bunch of whips and chains, pictures I cannot show you on the show. So this is this, like, nice lady. What is her name? Hold on. Tammy. That's Tammy and her husband, Drew. And so he gets laid off. So they immediately decide that she's going to start an online, I don't know if it's OnlyFans or something else account. And all these couples have kids, mind you. All these couples have kids living in this community. And there's a common theme as they're introducing these women that their husbands got into some sort of financial pickle or job pickle and encouraged them to do this.
I was working full-time as a nanny when Jim had his sales job. He was working like 60 hours a week.
The first time I recommended posting her nudes online, the look on her face was like...
Yeah, exactly. Like, is this a test? You were laid off from work.
Yes, or we get laid off, but there's no money coming in, so...
Yeah.
So, I got laid off, there's no money coming in, so looks to his wife. Yeah. So sorry, honey, you're going to have to put your knockers out there on the internet. And that one of them? Well, just play the panties clip.
That guy bought 3 pairs of panties. These, we need to mail these out.
Nicole. Her husband, who was the one who first brought up her doing this, sits there and helps her vacuum seal her used panties to send to other men to sniff. You guys, has society degraded this far? And then here's the thing, even as someone who's non-religious, that really just stuck in my craw, all of these women, as they're doing all of these things and talking about this, are constantly talking about their deep and abiding love for Jesus Christ.
You guys know what the rainbow means?
That you'll be lucky.
No.
Oh.
The rainbow's a mark of the covenant so that the Lord promises never to flood the earth again.
My parents always had Christian values, so to be able to show that to my kids is really special, and I take that really seriously.
Do you? Do you take that very seriously? The whole time, all these, oh, I go to church. They even have pictures of a girl outside church like this and like this. And it's like, oh, my gosh. And then you're going home and you're taking off your used underwear and putting them in a Ziploc baggie. And your husband's getting them ready to be shipped to other men. And then he's talking about, oh, yeah, we did these videos where it's just you stream your wife taking a shower and she would just sit there and take a shower, nothing sexy, just cleaning herself, and she'd make $4,000 or $5,000. Yes, sir. By other men watching your wife in your home where your children live taking a shower. That is that worth $4,000 or $5,000 to you? And I just could not believe in all these cases. And two of them were teachers. Two of the cast members on this show were teachers while they were doing the online sex content. And then they ended up being news stories. And that's why you might recognize a couple of them. They ended up being news stories. Two of them taught at the same school. And then it came out that they were doing like OnlyFans. So, you know, it's not Seattle where they would have got a promotion where they're at. They got fired. And so now it's like, well, I better just keep doing this. They were doing it while they were teachers. And look, I try not to be judgmental, although that all sounded very judgmental. If there's so many women who do online sex content these days, my issue is with the way it's being packaged up and put out there for public consumption by TLC. As if this is like some trendy thing. Oh, it's the double lives of suburban wives. And they mix in all this stuff about their faith and family and how all their values are so important to them. Normalizing, because these are just normal looking women, you know, in the Midwest somewhere. Who are making, one of them makes $200,000 a month. And so now you're just glorifying women going online and selling themselves and their pictures and their panties to creepy men. But the biggest issue I take is the men, you weak ass, disgusting cuck men. Where you would say, I lost my job today, honey. Can you strip naked and post pictures of yourself for other people to see? 3 examples in this of the husband basically saying, oh, we're not making ends meet. You got a nice rack. Can you sell pictures of it online? Can you play, Nicole, that about the men?
I was working full-time as a nanny when Jim had his sales job. He was working like 60 hours a week.
The first time I recommended posting her nudes online, the look on her face was like...
Yeah, exactly. Like, is this a test?
You were laid off from work.
Yes, or we get laid off, but there's no money coming in, so.
Yeah.
My husband would shovel shit for 20 hours a day in the hot sun rather than even suggest to me that I should sell even partially nude images online. It would not matter if I told him I could make $1 million a month. He would not care. He would flip burgers at Burger King before ever suggesting to me that I should do something like that. So TLC, again, love a lot of the trash TV. Some of my favorite trashy shows. You've come a long way from being the learning channel, however. However, hell, I even like Sister Wives. I even get a kick out of that. Weird families in America, some live like that. Interesting window into it. This is just too much for so many reasons, and it's just the further degradation of society. Can't wait till the next new episode comes out. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Am I? Yeah, I am. I'm kidding. Am I? I'm just kidding.
Are you going to watch it for us?
I'm probably boosting TLC's ratings here. It's just outrageous. Anyway.
It's out of control.
All right, we'll get to some national news. The socialist lost in Wisconsin. I am absolutely shocked that Francesca Hong lost the Democratic primary for Wisconsin governor to more reasonable Democrat David Crowley. Wasn't by a whole lot, though. Just fractions of a percentage point. I think Crowley ultimately got 39.8% of the primary vote, 39.4% for Hong. And so just a narrow, narrow defeat. Now, I will say that, you know, she was getting a ton of negative press in the final weeks. And there were a lot of Democrats saying, if she wins, I will vote for the Republican in the general election. And so I think the Democratic Party was getting very, very concerned that if she won, that they were going to lose to a Republican. So I almost wonder if there was a little bit of self-sabotage in the party to sabotage her campaign. And then did you also see this in Milwaukee, the USB sticks that went missing?
No.
So in the Milwaukee, it's kind of a weird. So election officials in Milwaukee said, like, late last night that 5 of 9 USB sticks with election results were missing. And it was a human error, and they had to go and track him down. Now, look, that obviously is like makes everybody think this is not a secure way to do this. I did appreciate that they came out and just immediately said, somebody misplaced the USB drives. Because it's like, if you didn't and you had waited, people would have been like, what's going on? And that was so much of the results, they really couldn't delay it. But yeah, that was interesting. I think they got it all sorted out, I believe. Maybe you should check on that. They've got it all sorted out. But I believe they recovered the USB drives or found the USB drives. All right. Huge news. I was sitting at the table this morning having a nice egg white omelet, trying to get more protein in the morning. And then I eat as much of it as I can and I give the rest to Lucky.
Oh,
so we both have breakfast together. Anyway, and I was watching Fox News, as I do in the morning, and this news came on, and I was, like, clapping to myself in my kitchen, like, hell yes. So it has finally happened. The Trump administration is ending Medicaid funding for children's transgender care. And this is something President Trump promised to do on the campaign trail. This from the Washington Post. Trump official said Tuesday that Medicaid would no longer cover gender transition surgery, puberty blockers, or hormones for minors, as President Donald Trump escalates his administration's crackdown on transgender medical care ahead of the midterm elections. The prohibition also applies to people 18 or younger, covered by the Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIP. The rule is expected to take effect on October 13th. But it says Medicaid and CHIP beneficiaries who are actively receiving hormone therapy specifically will be able to continue to receive coverage for up to 6 months as part of a tapering off period. Medicaid and CHIP benefits will continue to cover mental health treatments for transgender youth, according to notice. That is so interesting because just yesterday when we were debating the trans refugee money, Nicole said, oh, the only thing I'll give them money for is mental health treatment. And the Trump administration is giving them money for mental health treatment.
I knew they listened.
They do. I told you, he absolutely listens to the show. So Trump talked about this on Truth Social. He said, today at my direction, Dr. Mehmet Oz announced that this is happening. He said, we're not going to pay for our innocent children to undergo these barbaric surgeries and practices, which result in unthinkable and irreversible harm to their young bodies. Thanks to our strong position and pressure on this issue over the past year and a half, dozens of U.S. hospitals have already ended this so-called gender-affirming care, and we expect many more to follow. Just think about all of the young, innocent, and perhaps confused children who will be spared. And I could not agree more. And you will recall that because it was relevant to a few hospitals in Washington state where they basically said, okay, if you continue to mutilate kids, you don't get to participate in Medicaid and Medicare, which no hospital can afford to not be able to participate in Medicaid and Medicare. And so you did have this basically through force, essentially saying, we're not going to mutilate children anymore. The Trump administration won't let us do it. I did have this question for our subscribers, though, in our daily subscriber show poll. Do you believe Medicaid should continue funding gender care for minors who have already started until they're 18? So let's say they're 15. Should they fund it if they've already started?
I think there has to be some sort of plan in place to get them off of them, or I don't think you can cut them off just because I think that's not healthy probably, but there has to be some way to get them out of that, hormone treatment.
So maybe, I don't know if 6 months is enough because it's not their fault. And I really feel that way.
Right.
And that's why I just think yes, because maybe not until they're 18, but maybe for a year, because what was done to them is not their fault.
Right.
It was adults who allowed it to happen who did it to them.
Right.
And
but
I mean,
if you started last month and you could go off this month without any damage to your body,
yes,
then yeah, take them off.
But. Yeah. But that's why I don't know if it should be so cut and dry, because it's going to, mm-hmm, if it's going to harm the child by, you know, sort of expediting this,
right,
then I don't want to do it because, again, it's not their fault. So I have to say yes, even though I know that's going to be an, mm-hmm, unpopular opinion, but it's for, like, maybe not until they're 18, but longer than 6 months. And I am in the minority. Only 2% of our subscribers say yes, that it should continue until the age of 18. Fishing Too Deep has a good point. Should child abusers be allowed to continue hurting children until they're 18? Same thing, I guess.
Well,
but, you know,
no,
I know.
I would say that the difference is that you are cutting off a bad cycle. This and, like you said, if you could do more damage taking them off so quickly, I don't know.
Yeah. So that's, I guess, the unknown determinant. Beth said no, because it's harmful to the child and should be stopped ASAP. I could possibly agree to a short period of funding for weaning the child off the puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones. Matt says no, trans isn't a thing. It isn't reality. Stop with the madness. It's sick. Let's see. Crystal, I voted no. The only thing we should help these kids with is getting them into the correct therapy, not someone that will say they need to change to a different sex. Yeah, therapy for sure. And you know what? They're going to need therapy probably for at least until they're 18, but probably longer than that. I mean, you know, we've had detransitioners on the show who are still dealing mentally with what these doctors, if you can even call them that, did to these kids. Absolutely outrageous.
But the longer you're on all these things, the more damage it does. So I don't know. That's what some of our friends would tell us.
Matthew Cook says, I would support funding detransitioning care to right the wrongs of this butchery.
Yeah,
so yeah, maybe that's part of, that's a really good point, actually. And maybe that's a good middle ground, is we will pay for your detransitioning care. So the process of detransitioning you away from this medicalization, and that process would probably look like an easing off of certain medication. But if it's being done through the lens of detransitioning, then yeah, I think that that's something the federal government should take a good hard look at. All right. Nicole, while I'm doing this next story, can you look and see if they found the Milwaukee USB chips? Is that okay? Because
mm-hmm.
Now I don't know, and I don't want to give people bad information. All right. So the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, Scott Turner, was with Secretary RFK Jr. down in L.A. to put them on notice about the failed harm reduction approach, saying if you continue down this path of harm reduction for homeless drug addicts, we're going to take all federal funding away from you. Here is Scott Turner.
Under the leadership of President Trump and Vice President Vance, we are rooting out corruption and ensuring that those who need care are truly going to get it. The days of funding corrupt failure are over. The Trump administration will not fund a homeless industrial complex any longer. At HUD, we're only interested in real results. And that's actually helping our fellow Americans get off the streets, out of addiction, and on a path to self-sufficiency.
I don't know. That sounds racist to me, sir. Yeah, get it. He's black. He also brought one of these so-called harm reduction kits with him.
Something I want to show everybody. And I learned about, this is a bag that I learned that they're giving our homeless neighbors with American taxpayer dollars. And in this bag, when you go in here, now we're talking about helping the most vulnerable people in our country, a continuum of care. This is not a continuum of care that I'm looking for. This is drug paraphernalia that's in this bag. This brown bag that's handed to people, homeless people, that are addicted to drugs, that have mental illness, hardworking people's money. People are putting these together with their hands to give to people that are already addicted. Has nothing to do with politics. Has everything to do with caring for people properly. This is not the continuum of care that I'm looking for. It's not the continuum of care that Bobby is looking for. This is keeping people addicted and giving them a way to stay addicted, which y'all all agree. That has to be over. That's done.
That's done. And I mean, that's just common sense. So many of these things, think of how many lives we could have saved by being just brave enough to just speak common sense and say, yeah, we're not doing that. Why would we give people needles to put deadly drugs in their arms? That makes no sense. I mean, just outrageous. So I'm glad that there's some sane people out there saying what needs to be said. All right, a lot of investors focused on AI, crypto, tech, but you want to make sure that your money managers with their eyes on everything. Nothing gets past them. And I feel like Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital is that guy. Zach is my money manager. He's my mother's money manager. He's Nicole's money manager. And I know that Bulwark Capital is always focused on risk management. They're always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. And really just look at it as a second opinion. You know, there's no harm to that. It's free to get a second opinion. It's a huge thing, saving for your retirement and, you know, putting all your hard-earned money into investments. And so you want to make sure that it's being managed well. So Bulwark Capital can do their Know Your Risk portfolio review. Again, it's free. You can go sign up, knowyourriskpodcast.com. And Zach and his team will just go over, you know, how they approach things, their approach to risk management, et cetera. And unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every day from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast, on his YouTube channel, and on all social media platforms. Just search Know Your Risk podcast. All right, let's get to some comments from the live stream. Hello, Nicole.
Hey.
All right, Todd Welch. This person fled Florida in the middle of the night talking about the trans people at City Hall. So they claim, but they said that they came in 2014. So, okay. They also said, I was raised MAGA. That makes no sense. Because if you came here in 2014, then as a child being raised, you would have been much younger and Trump wasn't even running for president yet. So that's just a lie.
Everything.
And also, so you're saying there you are standing, living, testifying at a Seattle City Council meeting. You came in 2014 when we didn't have
money
for trans refugees.
It wasn't even a thing yet.
No. Really. So good.
The people that were trans at that time just wanted to live life as whatever they wanted to live life as and weren't asking for all of this attention and special treatment.
Yeah, 100%.
From Northwest to Anchor certification.
Do they have to certify anchors?
I know.
The more you know.
Northwest Anchor. How can you wear a face mask in City Hall meeting or at City Hall meetings? That should be criminal.
Yeah, you shouldn't be allowed to testify with a big black mask
and
on.
You should have to go through a metal weapons detector or something. That's crazy.
That is wild to me. I always thought that when I was a reporter covering City Hall more regularly, that I thought it was weird. There was literally no security at City Hall. No security to get in
That's
the building.
Terrible.
No security to get upstairs. No security. I mean, they have locked doors before you get to the city council offices.
Sure.
And you can't go up the elevator, like without, I mean, although that used to be able to just go up to the seventh floor, like where the mayor's office is, but now you need a little badge at least. But yeah, no, you can just come straight in. That's outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Abe says, this community is not a race and never will be. A $1.99 super chat. What do you mean by that, Brother Abe?
I don't know.
This community is not a race. Oh, maybe talk about the trans community. Like they want to be treated like a race of people, like have the same. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably what he means.
Maybe. Haynes says after the bite of Seattle, a no bag check.
Yeah, agree. Never has been.
It's out of control.
They absolutely need to do that. Very Victoria. I was one of the conservative speakers there. Yes, Victoria. I just know if you wanted your name out there. Victoria Palmer, she was with the Republican Party. She said it was unreal. Can't believe how eager our city council is to give money away like this. And Victoria was a champ. She was just sitting there staring back at him like, what? And then, you know, would ignore him and he'd still be sitting there. It's just like crazy.
Wild. On Superintendent Reichdahl's unhinged social post and rant at the Democratic convention, I guess, at the Washington Democratic convention.
He thinks he's the next Barack Obama.
That it's wild. And after he got done with it, he says, Jim Walsh is probably going to post about that. I'm like, yeah, we all should be posting about that. That is unhinged and you deserve all the ridiculous attention you get from it. But Chris says, why would a superintendent take a political side like that? Education is supposed to be neutral. That's true. He runs for an you know, it's supposed to be a nonpartisan position.
Yeah. All right. Eloise, you know, they looked that word up before writing it, talking about perseverating.
Right.
Perseverating means repeating, as you said, a word, action or thought over and over again, long after it is helpful or relevant. Well, he has to say that because he can't say beating a dead horse because PETA doesn't like that. I don't even know if I'm still saying it right. Perseverating.
Perseverating.
Perseverating. Mm-hmm. Hey, I like learning new words. That's fine.
Yeah. Eric says Chris Wagdahl with the $4.99 super chat is hoping to get elected to the insane asylum.
Yeah. Seattle's lead program being a bust. Greg Olakis, the government loves recidivism. It brings in more money. They don't want to solve the problem. They want to use the problem to generate more dollars.
Well, correct. Like I said, the lead program, if they admitted it wasn't working, then none of those people would have jobs. So,
yes, correct.
Matthew Cook says you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
I see what you did.
The real stats.
On Trash TV, going too far, Joe Dirt says society is effed. And if that's coming from Joe Dirt, it's true.
Craig O says, pretty sure Jesus just left the chat.
Yeah, for sure. Denise Young, $10 super chat. Nicole and Miranda's Christmas bonus fund. I'm already a subscriber because I shamed people who are freeloaders. I said, you know, Nicole's Christmas bonus is based off of paid subscribers on Patreon, and y'all are just freeloaders. So I got to use different methods to shame people into like subscribing to the show for $5 a month. But that is true. All right, Nicole, thank you. If you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, wonderful sponsors of our show for the last few years. And they do a lot of things out there. And actually, this is very relevant because on the show tomorrow, we're going to talk about some of the testimony at Seattle City Council against the no junk fees or in favor of getting rid of the junk fees. It was just too much crazy at one meeting to fit into one show, so I'm going to divide it in two. But that's something that RHA has been outspoken against because there's all these restrictions that are already put on landlords. We talk about a lot of them on the show, like rent control, etc. So I imagine if Seattle passes this ordinance, it's probably something RHA will get involved in. But they help landlords on an individual basis, also certain legal battles over private property rights. They have events all year long. And when the legislative session begins, they'll be down there advocating on behalf of your interests and your private property rights. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Oh, Indiana Fever coach Stephanie White is just having a rough time. And I don't think anyone in the WNBA is used to this much attention that they're getting right now over, you know, Caitlin Clark, Sophie Cunningham, the boys and girls sports issue. So you recall that at a game a couple days ago, Sophie Cunningham was clotheslined by an opponent, and her coach, after the game, took her opponent's side.
One of the things about Nay is that she's going to play her butt off, man. She's going to compete. Nobody's going to go walking in for a layup. And so I don't oppose the hard foul, but I also don't think that she intentionally went for the net.
Okay. The only thing as a coach to say in that situation is, yeah, I mean, because Sophie was like bleeding from her face. You know, that was a hard foul. I'm glad Sophie's okay. That's the only thing to say. So she's gotten a lot of heat since then. And it's been all over. Like, why would you not stand up for your player, your athlete? And so now she's come out and she's sort of backing away from her previous statements, but also got pretty fiery.
For those who have anything to say about the play in the last game, I didn't see the play in real time. I went straight to a press conference. I thought the play got called right. Thankfully, Sophie's okay. Was it egregious? Absolutely. When you have a chance to watch that over and over and over on replay, you can see that. I didn't have that in real time.
Were there any
I take personally any suggestions that I don't 100% always have my players back. I ride with them 10 toes down all the time. All the time. The reality is, with me, I will always lead with love. I will always lead with grace. I will always lead with humility. And I will always lead with integrity. Doesn't mean I'll always get it right. I'm also human. The hate, the fear-mongering, the divisiveness, the stuff that's trying to hijack our league will not win. When they go low, we go high. Love will win. Grace will win. Humility will win. And kindness will win. I stand by them. I will always stand by them. Everybody else can go to hell.
Kindness will win. Go to hell. Kindness. And just practically speaking, if you said you hadn't seen it in real time because you went straight to a press conference, then why did at that press conference you give an opinion in detail about what happened? So that doesn't make any sense. And you can tell she's not used to the pressure. Kindness will win. Go to hell. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. A reminder, if you'd like to come to Freedom Fest this weekend, a Let's Go Washington event, I will be there as one of the MCs. You do have to go to letsgowa.com. Letsgowa.com to register. I know there were some questions about Freedom Fest in the live chat. It's not my event. I can't answer those questions. So please, when you RSVP, ask your questions of Let's Go Washington. They'll be able to answer those. Make sure you bring a chair, a lawn chair to sit on and enjoy some music and speeches, etc. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.